Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning, everyone. So my next guest is a Pulitzer-winning journalist. She was working as a reporter at the New York Times when she was stationed. She stationed herself outside a heavily guarded shelter to speak with homeless families. Now, that led to a life-changing encounter. And nearly 10 years on, the reporter and the author of Invisible Child joins me now to tell the tale and to shine a light on a major issue across the world. Andrea Elliott, you are very welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, thanks for coming and speaking to us. It's lovely to speak with you. Can you take us back to when you first met Chanel and Dasani?
I'll never forget the moment that I saw them the first day. It was a sunny day in October of 2012, and I was standing outside this very controversial place. It was a decrepit shelter that was blocked off to the public, and so I could only interview mothers and children outside. And Dasani, who was named after the bottled water, along with her sister Aviana, mm-hmm. named after a different brand of bottled water,
okay.
were walking out of the shelter with their six siblings. There's eight of them in total, and their mother, Chanel, at the front of the line. And they were walking in a kind of single file procession. And that, I would later learn, was their way of surviving the street. And they just seemed so united, so together, it just struck me. And what I quickly saw in Dasani, and she was 11 years old at that time, was just a child who brimmed with optimism. And she had this spark. She was on the honor roll. She was the fastest sprinter on the block. And, you know, she just seemed like a kid who was going somewhere. And what was not apparent when I first met her was just how hard her life was in that shelter. The burdens she carried. This was a room that her entire family of 10 members lived in that was overrun with mice, and they had to use a mop bucket as a toilet because it was too scary to go to the bathroom. And mind you, this is a homeless shelter, like a lot of homeless shelters in New York City, that was just within a few blocks of multi-million dollar townhouses and wealth. And so it's a city that is very much defined by contrasts and extremes. And I wanted to know, what was that like? What was it like to grow up deeply poor in one of the richest cities in the world? And one of the things that moved me the most about Dasani was how she began her morning, because she would wake up really early, go to the window and stare out at this iconic building, the Empire State Building, because as she put it, it makes me feel like there's something going on out there. And so that's what I think drew me in, was I wanted to see, well, what is it that she wants to go on in her life? How does she want it to change? And it did change mine to follow her. I could never have expected it.
Family was everything to them. I mean, even when she won a place at the boarding school for low-income children founded by Hershey, the chocolate people, she was still drawn back to her family, wasn't she?
Family was her ultimate system of survival. This was a family that existed as a collective. They did not see themselves, the people in this family, as individuals. Their purpose there was higher than themselves. And I think that is one of the things that struck me the most about them, was how important that bond was. And when, you know, everyone wants poor children to transcend, to get to a better place. And I think there is this narrative out there that they need to escape. They need to leave home and go to another place in order to do that, because the influences of home are what keeps them back. But I think what we see with Dasani's story is it really asks us to reckon with our more traditional view of what success is. If success means you have to cut the bond with your family, you have to geographically transplant yourself, and you have to talk differently, which is what she was learning at the school, and you have to act differently, part with your culture, then is that a fair thing to ask ultimately? And not even is it fair, but for Dasani, it just didn't feel authentic. It didn't feel like a happy destination. She was her whole self with her family. And so that's what she ultimately chose.
The family and the mother in particular dealt a very bad hand, in the sense that she'd a lot to contend with. I mean, many of us are familiar with OxyContin because of recent reports and the series Dope Sick.
Yes.
But she had a problem with addiction. She was prescribed, was she, by a doctor, OxyContin,
she
and
was.
Then became addicted. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes. Chanel, Dasani's mother, had a long hospital stay. She had tuberculosis, which she had contracted herself as a child in the shelter system. It came back in 2009 when they were living in Staten Island, and she wound up for weeks in this hospital. The doctor, it's the typical story, prescribed this. She wound up addicted. She thought there was nothing wrong with being addicted because her doctor had given it to her. So she started to look for it on the street. I think what's different about this story is that it's not something that's forgiven in Chanel's community by the government systems that are watching her family. It's not, the response isn't, let's treat this and keep the family together, but she needs help. It's more, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, we're going to take your kids away because you're nothing more than a drug addict. And I think that that is a racial division that you see often in how poor families are treated. The vast majority of them in the system, the child protection system, are Black or Hispanic. And so it's a very different reality. And I think that really what her addiction was a symptom of a lot of trauma she was trying to sort of treat herself, right? Without the right help. And that trauma is built on generations of racial oppression. And it's something that I pieced together very carefully in this book. And it's why in part it took so long, but it was a very important thing to understand that history for this family is connected to the present.
Andre, what's interesting is the family refused to go to soup kitchens or apply for disability benefits. Why was that?
So there is this very common held perception of poor people that, for instance, they don't want to work, they're lazy. If you're ever around a deeply poor family, the first thing you'll see is that the parents are always working. It just doesn't look like formal labor. It is the constant hustle of getting food on the table. It is this absolute need to survive, which is more work than any regular job could ever entail. And most of the people I talked to wanted to work. They were desperate to work, but they had barriers that stood between them and employment, including things like their prison records in the past, things that they had done. So another big concept about the poor is that they want to live off the government, that they are welfare dependent. Mm. And here's a family that refused to apply for disability for their kids because they didn't like that label. They wanted them to feel enabled, not disabled. This is a family that was obsessed with words. And it's something that I absolutely love about them is they're almost Chanel and Supreme, the parents, like walking poets. And they're always breaking down the meaning of words. And they just said, no, I'm going to give up, it was probably $1,000 extra cash a month to keep my children's dignity intact. Mm. And so that right there just upends this whole idea to my mind. And it's more common than you think.
I was very sorry to hear that your brother sadly passed away recently. So condolences to you and your family.
Thank you.
You did mention in an interview that Chanel was a great source, Dasani's mother, of support when he was battling addiction. Did she give you any advice that might be helpful to anyone out there who is in a similar situation that might be listening?
Yes. So Chanel, I think one of the reasons you talk about our bond so early on, I think it was the fact that we were both mothers that enabled a certain trust to build. She got to know my children here and there, and I obviously spent lots of time with her family. And the other, I think, great source of connection, regardless of how different we were, right? Because I was coming from a very different world than she was that my family, like many families, struggled with a member, my brother, who was an alcoholic for many years. And it was a constant source of grief and trauma, really, and anxiety. And Chanel met him. She helped me, through his periods of sobriety. I was a big support, and I was also there when he fell off the wagon. And it was a constant sadness in my life. And I think the thing that most helped me, that Chanel could offer, was the advice that you can throw everything you want at this problem, Andrea, but she called me Drea, but it's going to ultimately rest with him. What does he decide to do? And in a way, that relieved me a lot of the feeling that I could save him. So I see deep reporting as a two-way street, as a conversation, much like the one you and I are having right now. It's not me asking the questions and her answering them. I think that you get a deeper understanding of the people you're writing about when you share some of what's going on in your own life. It gives you great perspective.
How are they doing at the moment?
They are on an upswing, I would say. So Dasani returned from the boarding school to her family, and they were reunited after a long court battle. And through the child protection system, they basically came back together again, four members. They're living in an apartment now. They're no longer homeless, and Dasani's in college.
Wow.
So she's found a way to reach for success on her own terms.
Good on her. I'm looking at a picture of her here. She is just a stunning young woman, and fair play to her. It's an incredible story. According to the book, in the fall of 2012, Dasani belongs to an invisible tribe of more than 22,000 homeless children, the highest number ever recorded in the most unequal metropolis in America. Almost half of New York's 8.3 million residents are living near or below the poverty line. That is frightening. Well, it's heartbreaking. It's an inspiring read. It's about resilience, family, and the cost of inequality, invisible child poverty, survival, and hope in New York City. Andrea, thank you so much for joining me this morning. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.